Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Monday, March the 18th, 72nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is the bank dude, John Dalby.
Hey, Brian, Brian, it's good to see you.
Yeah, Mondays are always fun.
And you're doing double duty behind the board.
Oh, I'm just such a
Renaissance man.
Oh, whatever. Yeah. Oh, boy. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about, well, are you in the right slot? How's that? And if you're not, how do you identify the right slot you should be in?
And do I want to be in a slot?
That's right. Slot car racing when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say. It's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with John Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank. But before we do our quote this afternoon, sir.
Yes, this one is from Jane Wagner, and it was from, I believe it's either a play or a book, The Search for Intelligent Life in the Universe. And the quote is, "All my life I've wanted to be somebody, but now I see that I should have been more specific."
Ain't that the God's honest truth? Oh, yeah, yeah. Be careful of what you wish for.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So by slotting in the intro, we're making references to people and their job functions. Not, I would suggest not even a particular job, but a job function. That there are some things that we all excel in our job. And there are things that either we don't do a good job in or we really don't want to do a good job in because that means we have to do it more often. How do you determine what your slot is?
You know, a lot of people that are unhappy at their jobs or are unsuccessful in them typically are in the wrong job. And there's a number of things that you need to do to, one, ensure that you're in the right place, and two, as you hire people, make sure you're hiring people for the right job. I've made the mistake a number of occasions of hiring really, really good people, putting them in the wrong job and nearly destroying their careers. So it's very, very important.
You that, have that magic about
yes,
you.
Yes, I do. Yes. I can destroy just about anything I touch. Yeah. You got to see my garden.
I was thinking more your casserole, but yeah. That's all right.
So, you know, you really need to do an evaluation for yourself on what your core competencies are. Some competencies can be changed. Some are very difficult to change, and some just it isn't going to happen.
So what is there? Let's start with those folks who are currently either have employees or who are an employee. What are the warning signs if there might be something not quite as we would all like it to be?
Well, the two biggest signs is one is poor job performance, and two, that they're unhappy. Occasionally you get somebody who can overcome their unhappiness and will just forcibly do a good job for you, but they're still unhappy. But those are the
put on a happy face, right?
Right. But those are the two things that you're going to notice over time. If you have an employee that's performing poorly, but you think they're a good person, hard worker, it very well may be that you've asked them to do something that is outside of their core competencies.
What about productivity? Lack thereof. Lack of recognition that there's a lack of productivity. Things of that nature that I think we've all had folks who have worked with us or for us who were stunned and amazed that they weren't doing the job, or that somebody has taken them aside and say, you know, you're not doing the job right, wrong. It's just not getting done the way that we want it done. Just deer in the headlight. Is that, obviously there's management culpability in this also, or supervisorial culpability. But what if somebody just really doesn't understand that they're not doing the job right?
Well, as a supervisor, first thing you want to do is make sure that you've established task clarity. The biggest mistake that I see in supervisors and managing people is, having expectations that are unspoken or unwritten. So a lot of times, you'll see it. The shopkeeper will hire somebody to work at the counter, and when it's slow, they get upset because the person's not cleaning or, fronting shelves or whatever they think they should be doing. And they're frustrated by it. And I'll talk to them about that and find out that, well, they never really sat down and told the person, it's like they should know, but they don't. You got to tell them. So task clarity is the first thing. If you've gone through that and you're still getting poor performance, then you got to look at core competencies and you very well may either have the wrong person or the right person in the wrong job.
There are people, Ted Williams is the one who comes to my mind. Extraordinary performer. I think everybody would agree to that. Hall of Fame, all that kind of stuff. As a batting coach, horrific. As a manager, so-so. There are some people who just have the innate ability to do. Peter Principle says, well, obviously then they have to become managers or coaches. Not necessarily the case. When they asked him, what do you do? He said, I just stand there and swing at it if it looks like a strike. That's it. So his training manual would have been rather simple. Is that something you have to look for too, if the job comes too easy to the supervisor? Maybe they're not the best to train?
The issue, the mistake that is often made is you take somebody who's very good at what they do and you put them in a position of management over that department. And oftentimes that can be disastrous. We can talk about that after the break.
It's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back talking
with free
John
to say.
Dalby. Yes. actually, we're talking, but Tweety Bird got in, and so now we're talking.
Yeah.
John, we were talking, notice I said that professionally that time, yes. Before the break, about people who just have ability, and it's a God-given talent, and they're fortunate that career path was available to them. And they do. And they just do it and they do it. And a lot of times people look to high performers as being management material. And as you said, you've screwed up people by mishiring.
Exactly.
I can think of handfuls of salespeople that I've known throughout the country, radio particularly, who were extraordinary on the street. But if they have to start teaching what they do, budgeting what they do, desking what they do, they get so frustrated, burned out, it isn't what they want, and their productivity falls. Why not let somebody who does well do well and hire somebody else?
Well, that key salesperson may be the greatest sales manager you could ever put in that position, or they might be the worst. I mean, there's that scale. The question is, how do you discern that? And the ability to teach and communicate, you know, and get along with peers is important. But also inspiring followership. You know, people ask me what makes a good leader? Now, a leader is different than a manager, but what makes a good leader and how do you identify them? It is what I look for is the fact, is there followership? if they're putting together an event, do people follow them and want to be a part of it? If they're lead, and this doesn't mean in a management position. So I observe those people that are working in non-management positions and see if even outside their job functions, when they lead, do people follow?
Well, I would,
and that's something that's a competency that is very, very difficult to coach or teach.
That's more than innate.
Correct.
The comment I would make is that most folks want to be around successful people. There's something about them, whether it's their cheery disposition or there's something, whatever it is that makes somebody successful, it almost oozes. I mean, it's a palpable thing. And I think we've all been around those types of folks. So it would appear at first blush that would be a natural born leader, manager. How do you screw somebody like that up?
By putting them in a management position if they don't have those competencies, because what will happen is they will become frustrated. The people that are working for them will become frustrated. You're going to see a decline in productivity. You're going to see high turnover, all the things that happen. Very important to understand, most people join companies and quit supervisors. So if you have a company with multiple supervisors, or you are one, and you're doing a poor job, you're going to have high turnover. And that's one of the first signs that you've got a supervisor problem. And so you really need to understand whether or not that person is either just very good at what they do, or if they have that innate leadership ability.
Is there a way to sample the water with that?
You can, but it's very difficult to make somebody a manager and then 6 months later say you're going back to, you know, being frontline or whatever the position is.
Would it be that difficult, or do you think it would come as a relief? Because I would think, just as we were talking about frontline folks, knowing if they were successful or productive or not, boy, if you've been with the company now for 10 years and now I bump you up into the second floor office, and your area of responsibility is starting to tank, and you can kind of see why, and you're not happy where you are, and the good old days were when you were back on the first floor, it might come as a relief.
I've seen it work both ways. I have one case that and it really has to do with the character of the individual. A person that I had to do exactly that. I had to move them backwards. Now I let them keep their salary and so forth, but I had to remove some of the responsibility that they had gleaned over time.
A titlectomy?
Exactly. And this person, you know, that I'm thinking of, handled it incredibly well, transitioned and did it with, you know, a good attitude, and is a star employee because we put him back into, you know, a position in which, you know, they thrived. I've also had them, when you do that, there's so much bitterness and anger. Their ego is bruised, and it just destroys them. And at that point in time, all they could really do is go start a career again somewhere else. So you are taking a risk when you take a really top performer and put them in a management position. Again, task clarity is very important with that person. You know, talk through the scenarios. And, you know, your question was, is there a sense of relief? I've seen it both ways.
So as you're considering hiring into the organization, do you include your high producer and paint a realistic picture and say, you know, I don't know if this is for you. Do you know if this is for you? Is this something you'd be interested in? And just kind of leave it at that and wait for feedback?
Spend some time with them. You know, walk through what it is they enjoy about their job, what they don't, and get an idea of what their competencies are, and then make a determination whether they would fit into a management supervisory role.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from John Dalby.
This is Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City Schools Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1. Eliminating our combination classes and the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course in extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the bank dude, John Dalby from Redwood Capital. John, as you are trying to find your slot, or you're trying to find somebody for the slot that you're looking to fill in the workplace, there are some things that you can work with folks on. There are some things you can't. I mean, if you're looking to hire somebody who comfortably fits in a 4-foot doorway, I could be your guide the rest of the way, and I'm going to get tired of bruising my tummy. It just isn't going to work and never will work. So how do you isolate the things that just have to be versus the things that you can either train to or experience to and be a better employee?
You know, hiring is one of the greatest challenges there are. And, you know, the first thing is take your time, get to know them, multiple interviews, get second opinions. If I'm hiring into a team, I like to get the team members to interview that person, spend some time, get some buy-in.
Can you use references?
Absolutely.
Even with the current labor laws and litigation and liabilities that there are, you can still glean some information.
Well, the liability is generally on the referrer side, or the person is being the reference, not the other way around. But, you know, there are things you can and can't do, and I suggest that you have an HR consultant help you through that process. But, you know, because that's not me. But I'm looking, you know, I'm looking specifically for the competencies that I can't train. Intelligence is very difficult to train. You know, using Brad Smart's book, Top Grading, he gives us a list of the very difficult to change. Intelligence, analytical skills, creativity, conceptual ability, integrity, assertiveness, inspiring followership, energy, passion, ambition, and tenacity. If they're lacking those things and you need them for this position, you're not going to train them.
Really? I jotted down the ones that I kind of went, conceptual. I would think, now there are people, and I think we're each married to one, who have a tough time. I can go into a home. You go, oh, do this, do that, ding, 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 boom, and I got it in my head. Ange doesn't. Okay. So I get the conceptual might be or might not be. But if you share the big picture of the company and where you're going and the employee or the potential employees sees the big picture, wouldn't they then have a better idea of the concepts that you're trying to accomplish with their position?
Each temperament is a little different. And so, you know, those conceptual thinkers – for instance, it's easier for me to grasp concepts. I can get them very quickly, but give me a list of 10 items to memorize and I'll struggle. There are other people that can memorize a list of 10 items very, very quickly, but don't really know how they fit into the big picture. And each of those have a different skill set, for instance, just using that example, that would be applicable to different jobs.
So you're saying analytical or creative?
Conceptual.
You're going to have one or the other.
Right.
Okay.
How do you train somebody to be creative? They are or they are not.
Yeah, creativity is just one of those.
Right.
It's like intelligence.
You know.
Yes or no.
Passion. How do I inspire passion if it doesn't exist?
Now, I would argue that passion exists. Think of a baseball team. Okay, team is sub 500 for years. Okay, and you've got a guy who's spending the entire career with you. Okay, his passion level, now his pride might be involved and his individual performance, but as far as passion for team, passion for probably is, let's call it a 4 on a 10. Now the team starts winning. Things are going good. We bring in a couple of kids that can throw smoke and life is good and we're winning regularly. I would suggest his passion level is going to go a little bit higher for the team because it's successful. Is that the passion you're talking about, or is there a different
definition? I think what
you're
talking about is rekindling a passion that was once there because they're in baseball. But let me give you a different example. What if somebody who didn't like radio came to work for you? It would be very difficult for you to get them passionate about radio. And if they don't love it and aren't passionate about it, they're not going to be successful.
So if you're
especially,
a one,
especially in a leadership position.
Yeah. So if you're a one, you're not going to become a 7, 8, 9.
Correct.
You might overachieve to a 3. Okay. So that's a matter of degrees then on that.
Correct. And it's a passion for the industry. It's a passion for their work. If they don't care about the field they're going into, if they're not passionate about that.
What about somebody who is passionate about the customer? Is that a universal that most people will want, or does it have to be more narrowly focused?
Yeah, that passion for customer service and, you know, it's an empathy. It's a desire to make your customers happy. You know, that is a skill set. It can be taught. It can be difficult to teach, but it can be taught. And that would probably be in that middle range of you know, challenging but doable.
If somebody's worth spending the effort and energy over the
correct
time to get them there.
Correct.
Yeah. So how do you establish minimum thresholds? You
for
said intelligence
position?
As an example. Okay. Most of us, we took IQ tests somewhere back in our elementary school period and were pegged accordingly. So I would never be a banker, for example. You would never be a radio guy, for example.
Yeah,
you know, I don't have the
creativity.
Yeah.
I do have the face for radio, but I don't have the creativity.
So how do we get the knowledge of the intellect of a potential employee? Is that the rigorous training? How do you get whether or not this person has the native ability to do whatever it is that we're looking for?
We got a lot of cues about intelligence. One would be, you know, education levels. Not that that is in itself. I've known some people that have some significant degrees that I would not deem intelligent.
Tenacity but, might be.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you do have that element. And sometimes there's, you know, great academic achievement, but very little common sense. So, but you have that indicator. Past performance in other jobs would be an indicator. Credentials would be an indicator. Also, your conversation with them. Language skills, when you're asking questions, finding out how quick they are on their feet, you know, can they add, can they, you know, conceptualize? These are things that you're looking for depending upon the job you're hiring for.
If it's somebody who's supposed to help everybody get out of the building real fast with a fire, you don't want deliberative skill sets.
Exactly.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from John Dalby.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with John Dalby. John, as we're looking at these skill sets, okay, we're now having the ability to recognize certain abilities, certain talent sets. How do we know what we need in the job? So we're looking for somebody, let's say, who's got a three-digit IQ with a certain degree of creativity and high empathy skills. How do we arrive at that? How do we know that's what we want?
Well, you go to your job description. Hopefully you have written one before you hire somebody, so you have an idea of who you're looking at. And really, there's two different approaches to hiring. One is very deliberate, where I write down a skill, you know, a very specific job description. This is what I'm looking for. These are the skills that I need. They need to be able to lift so much weight. They need to be able to do these types of math. They have to have these oral and written communication skills. They have to be able to speak, you know, whatever language, have some, you know, experience in certain types of tasks. You know, that's who you're looking for. The other way, if you read Collins' book, would be, you know, finding the very, very best people, seeing who's on the bus, and then make a determination where you're going based on the skill sets you have.
Now, isn't that one a little bit more frightening? Because it still doesn't guarantee you're going to have the match for the right slot that you want.
Well, and that also assumes that you have some flexibility of the business you're going to do.
Yeah, you got more than four employees. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, if you've opened up a retail store selling cigars or shoes, you know, you might be a little more locked in and you need somebody that, you know, would be good at doing those tasks, you know. So those are the two, you know, and I've hired both ways. I've hired based on tasks that are hired specifically for certain tasks, and I have hired opportunistically where here is somebody who's available that has a very difficult to find skill set, has the right attitude. Gee whiz, we're gonna hire that person and work them into the organization and grow into them.
And that I see is wonderful when the opportunity is there. Your employment base is large enough. You know, if you got 7,500 people, yeah, you're looking for good guys and gals all the time, and there's going to be a slot. But getting back to our cigar shop, you got three people.
That's correct.
You better know tobacco, and you better know, you know, the story behind this stuff, because that's going to be a little different.
Well, unless some guy comes along, and because of their skill set, it allows you go into a different line of business. You know, I'm going to add, you know, this product line, because now I have somebody who's an expert in it and I think there's a market opportunity. Or I can hire this guy who has a significant following at a competitor, bring him or her across and make...
Do those ever work out, hiring from across the street?
They can. It can be dangerous. You could be hiring somebody else's problem.
Or bringing a mole inside.
I don't think that would happen. I mean, I've never seen it happen,
no.
But, you know, it could.
Yeah. Well, I'm just somebody who was less than satisfied at one place, they come across the street to their direct competitor, learn their stuff, and then they go on either to somebody else or they go back because they're hired back again. Silicon Valley hated.
Yeah, now that you mention it. Yes, that happened to me once. I hired somebody. They were with us for a relatively short period of time, used us to go back to their original employer for more money.
Leverage back.
Yeah.
If somebody wants more information other than going to johndalby.com, where can folks look?
Top Grading by Brad Smart. It's a big book, but it's probably the best book you'll ever read about hiring and interviewing.
And if you do inadvertently stumble on johndalby.com, don't go to the recipe section.
That's correct.
It's just not worth the click. Yeah. Thanks for coming by, bud. We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with John Dalby. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.